AMAC Nick Catholic Medical Board meeting. With us today is Mr. Larson from the Attorney General's Office, and Ms. Anthony, our Executive Director. And we'll do roll call, formal.
Dr. Sadlick? Dr. Sadlick? Dr. Popio?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts? Ms. Gallen?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt? And Dr. Rubin? It appears Dr. Spatt is absent at this time, and Dr. Rubin has already informed me he will not be present today. But we do have quorum.
Okay, we have quorum. Now we'll roll on. Civility policy, in accordance with the open meeting law, the board has a civility policy to prohibit any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out its business. Those violating this policy will be asked once to modify their behavior. If you cannot do so, we'll disconnect you. What I'd like to do with number four, the board's permission, is roll 4A, and if we could take that all the way to 4A, all the way through Q. I'll make the motion, but I'll need a second.
This is Dr. Popio, I'll second that motion.
Roll call, please. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt? Motion carries.
With that, we'll move on to number five. Start off with 5A, case number 20-168. This is Dr. Jason Porter. We're in formal interview, so if everyone on the speak, board members could identify themselves, that would be helpful. I'll have Ms. Anthony take it from here.
Okay. And board members,
Dr. Morris.
Okay, Morris, Dr. Morris, thank you. Board members, I would like to remind you, we do have a court reporter in the room, and it's sort of difficult to hear over the phone. So if everybody wouldn't mind speaking clearly and stating your name before you speak, that would be very helpful. Thank you. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is case number 20-168. This is Dr. Jason Porter. This is a formal interview. It is 11:08 on July 8th, 2021. Pursuant to ARS 3215-51F, this is the formal interview regarding Dr. Jason Porter, case number 20-168. Is the licensee present?
Yeah.
Could you please state your name for the record?
Dr. Jason Allen Porter.
No, did that.
Dr. Porter, are you being represented by legal counsel today?
I am.
Would you please have counsel introduce himself?
Yes, my name is A. Melvin McDonald. I'm with the law firm of Jones, Stelpin, and Ockham. And I am representing Dr. Porter today.
Thank you. I'm Gail Anthony, the Executive Director of the board. The following board members are present. Dr. Sadlick is board chair. Dr. Popio, vice chair. Ms. Tibbetts, board secretary. Ms. Gallen, and Dr. Campbell. Dr. Porter, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today. the process for the formal interview, and the possible actions the board may take. The purpose of this formal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the case. The board will hear a brief overview of the case, hear a 5-minute presentation from you and your attorney, and then we'll interview you. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may be asked to you may ask them through the board chair. If you choose not to participate in this formal interview, a formal hearing may be requested at this time. This proceeding is being recorded to provide a record. The board has also hired a court reporter for this matter. Everyone must speak loudly and clearly. Only one person may speak at a time. Please remember to introduce yourself each time prior to speaking. The following is a brief overview of this case. Upon initial notice of the criminal investigation being conducted by DPS, a board complaint was opened. As part of the investigation, a CSPMP report was run regarding respondents' prescribing history. The board subpoenaed the medical records of 8 patients, patient CH, ST, BB, DW, JS, SM, KA, and JP, based on the results of the CSPMP report. The medical records indicate respondent failed to record physical examinations and or vitals for each of these patients. The only exception was for patient DW, whose vitals respondent charted on 131 of 2020 and 62 of 2020. Moreover, the CSPMP report indicated respondent prescribed phentermine, a controlled substance, to his wife on 9/9/2019, 3/16/2020, 4/15/2020, and 5/14/2020, and ketamine, a controlled substance, to his wife on 6/23/2020 and 10/1/2020, all with authorized refills. Prescription copies obtained from several pharmacies also indicate respondent prescribed out-of-scope medications, oxycodone, acetaminophen, 3 times between January 2018 and October 2019, specifically on 1/17 of 2018 and again on 4/4 of 2018. Respondent prescribed patient CH, oxycodone, acetaminophen, number 60. These records also indicate on 10/7 of 2019, respondent prescribed patient LB, oxycodone, acetaminophen, number 20. During the course of the investigation, the board also received transcripts of phone conversations involving respondent, wherein he admitted to using Dr. Kiefer's DEA without her knowledge and instructing clinic staff to call in prescriptions for his wife under Dr. Kiefer's name. He also admitted on one of the calls that because there was a chart note missing from one of the prescriptions for his wife under Dr. Kiefer's name, respondent subsequently added a chart note before submitting it to in response to the subpoena requested from the board. The board held its initial review of the matter at its February 11th, 2021 meeting. At that meeting, respondent was present along with his attorney. Respondent took the position that Dr. Kiefer had fabricated her allegations against him to cover up her own failure to properly chart. Respondent further intimated that Dr. Kiefer had actually authorized the prescriptions written to his wife at an earlier time. The initial review was continued for further investigation. Respondent subsequently provided the board a packet of documents in support of his position. The board continued its initial investigation at its May 13, 2021 meeting. Respondent was present along with his attorney. Dr. Kiefer and her attorney were also present. Dr. Kiefer provided the board with further information and documents relating to respondent's position and was given an opportunity to respond. At that meeting, it was suggested that several of the documents respondent had previously provided to the board were incomplete and/or manipulated. Dr. Kiefer also provided the board with documents showing respondent had run numerous PMP reports on patients which he was not treating and without authorization. And to the licensee, I'm going to swear you in. Please raise your right hand. I will now place you under oath. Do you swear that the testimony that you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes. Could I just indicate before Dr. Porter testifies that for some reason my phone went dead and I probably missed about 4 or 5 minutes of the presentation by Ms. Anthony. I now recall back in and am now on the line.
What she did, Mr. McDonald, is she read, she basically went through the protocol and then she stated what you already have, which is in your in his IR incident report that was written off.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I can verify. That's correct, ma'am.
Good.
The board will hear a 5-minute presentation from the licensee and or counsel at this time.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, sir.
Grateful at this point, thank the board for the opportunity to address them. As I've already provided evidence on behalf of my defense, I'd like to speak more personally on some items in the few minutes that I've been given. It has been a great shock, to say the least, to be indicted based on the false claim I was using another physician's DA license. However, to be indicted based upon the false testimony from a close friend and colleague for over 20 years is for me even more shocking as well as painful. Ignoring the fact that I'm a reputable physician without a single patient complaint in 18 years, a supporter of SCNM, and a mentor to dozens of students over the years, to be accused and treated with such disregard for normal decency by a trusted friend is a great shock. This board has a great responsibility to protect the public. It must have been concerning for you, especially since DPS both believed and started an investigation based on her complaint. DPS even came to some awful conclusion based on the lies without ever interviewing me or my wife or any of the staff who had called in the specific prescriptions to substantiate the accusations. I did talk to DPS at least on one occasion based upon the assumption they were investigating Dr. Kiefer, which caused me great concern. But at no time has anyone ever been honest or open about the reasons for their questions arising from the false lies started by Dr. Kiefer about myself and my wife. I've learned more than I would like to learn about trusting a friend and a professional colleague with the care of my dear friend and wife. If I were to repeat the past, I would require evidence of all the documentation associated with any request verbally granted by Dr. Kiefer. I never had any suspicion of such gross neglect by Dr. Kiefer in charting my wife's medications. Until this investigation, and after a thorough review of my wife's medical records, we were unaware of Dr. Kiefer's neglect in charting all requests, whether from my wife, myself, or from the staff. I believe that the first thing for honest, truth-seeking individuals to do is to start asking questions. I do not feel like those who were in charge of this investigation asked enough questions. They did not question Dr. Kiefer's story, and they did not honestly question me or my wife. I don't know why Dr. Kiefer has chosen to lie or why she felt the need to accuse us of wrongdoing, but I know I have no reason or motive to have done anything of which I am accused. The indictment is a result of misrepresentation of the fact of how my wife was supported and treated over those many years by Dr. Kiefer. She has misled DPS from the very beginning, claiming every script not documented by her was instead authorized by myself. DPS has been manipulated by Dr. Kiefer to believe her claims without ever interviewing those who could verify her awful story. I chose years ago, during a time when it wasn't as popular as it is today, to be a naturopathic physician so that I could stand up for and be a champion for individuals who are neglected, ignored, or even accused of causing their own health problems. In some form of irony, 9 years ago, my wife became one of these individuals. Having been seen by the top docs in Arizona for her symptoms, she was eventually diagnosed with rare, irreversible, and untreatable diseases that she is likely to carry with her until the day she dies. During these years, I rallied every doctor to support that I could. In our recent reply to the board, I was able to address many aspects related to the medical care provided to my wife by Dr. Kiefer, who was a great support for my wife over many of those years. Contrary to her multitude of lies, Dr. Kiefer was, in fact, one of my wife's primary doctors and was aware of all my wife's diagnoses, debilitating symptoms, and the benefits from various prescriptions. Contrary to her claims, Dr. Kiefer did, in fact, authorize either directly herself or through the staff all prescriptions as requested. Since the slanderous accusations and lies against myself were declared in an indictment in December of 2020, Dr. Kiefer has accused my disabled, chronically ill wife of being a scheming, drug-seeking, law-breaking, prescription-abusing, breast housewife in need of uppers and downers in order to manage her life. This was said and implied by Dr. Kiefer to DPS, this board, and Premier Civil Suit without providing one bit of evidence, despite the overwhelming documentation of my wife's illness, while knowing full well the worst symptoms of my wife's conditions. My wife's kind, gentle, sensitive, and loving nature has now been criminalized, making her doubt her right to be treated for her disorders without feeling shamed by doing so. For Dr. Kiefer to blame and allow DPS to insinuate that my wife had no real illness or legitimate benefit from prescribed medication is an obvious and blatant lie. That Dr. Kiefer allowed to achieve her own nefarious purposes. I can only summarize my feelings about how my wife has been victimized. On top of the daily pain and suffering my wife's illness, she's now a victim of a different type of trauma. Her friend and doctor, whom she had trusted for the last 10 years, has betrayed her. Has betrayed her trust and sought to destroy her life for no other reason than her own grief. The reality of my wife's illness is indisputable. It is unreasonable then to believe that Dr. Kiefer had no knowledge of her condition. My wife visited Dr. Kiefer regularly. They would have discussed her current condition. My wife would have asked for refills. Well, Dr. Kiefer continued to claim she had no knowledge. Lastly, based on how I understand the law, a man or woman is considered innocent until proven guilty. I've only been brought under suspicion by the false accusations of one person. I'm grateful for this board's patience as we presented evidence to bring into question the integrity of Dr. Kiefer's claims and the extent of the investigation by DPS. I am surprised by the actions of Dr. Kiefer, who filed a civil suit against me, timed just days following my indictment. The gavel has not yet even dropped, yet I'm defending myself in a civil suit as if I had been found guilty. I am just as concerned by the emails provided to this board by Dr. Kiefer containing communications between herself and Detective Eric Andrews, discussing how they intend to get me to surrender my medical license. It seems many people have been convinced of my guilt and are strongly committed to causing me great professional harm. With the help of many, we have provided this board affidavits, medical records, and evidence of inconsistency by Dr. Kiefer in charting controlled medications and surgeries for various patients. If I am to be proven guilty of committing a crime based on the lack of charting for one patient, am I also guilty of wrongdoing for Dr. Kiefer's other patients who lack charting for controlled prescriptions? How can Dr. Kiefer explain the staff of EVND sending and receiving messages on a regular basis for refill authorizations for patients at EVND and medical offices throughout the valley on days in which she was not in the office? The entire DPS investigation was based on evidence from TNT and statements from Dr. Kiefer saying that if she didn't chart it, she must not have called it in. Is that really possible? Is she so perfect in her charting that this is evidence enough to indict someone? I'd also like to remind the board of the disclaimer that you know, found on the PMT website, directly solely to naturopathic physicians, that states the state of Arizona does not warrant the information in the PMT database to be accurate or complete. The report is based on search criteria entered in the data entered by the dispenser. I have been indicted on evidence from the PMP and Dr. Kiefer's own testimony. Neither one can claim to be 100% reliable or accurate, as we have proven. I'm asking, upon review of the evidence and testimonies provided, if the board truly believes Dr. Kiefer's claim. I want to reiterate in simple terms, I did not use Dr. Kiefer's DAA to call in prescriptions without requesting the staff to authorize through her. A polygraph test proved that. Dr. Kiefer was fully aware of my wife's condition and the numerous prescriptions she was calling in for her. Dr. Kiefer has lied to law enforcement agents and this board. With all this in mind, I respectfully ask the board to dismiss these allegations. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Porter. Bruce Badlick. Mr. McDonald, for the record, we have a court report, as you know. Do you have anything you want to add?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much for that opportunity. I will be very brief. There are 10 points that I want to arrange with you. The primary purpose of our attendance here is to address the accusations of unlawful use of Dr. Kiefer's DEA number by Julie Porter, my client's wife. There are facts which I would suggest are undisputed. His wife has a serious, documented, debilitating health condition which required the medications that were prescribed. Not only was she treated by Dr. Kiefer, but this condition has been diagnosed and confirmed by the Mayo Clinic, Phoenix Neurology, Gilbert Cardiology, and Dr. Kiefer in multiple instances has acknowledged and agreed with these debilitating conditions. The third point, Dr. Kiefer has been the doctor at Julie Porter for over a decade. As best as we've been able to conclude, even when she worked at Contour before going with EVMD, there were approximately 38 visits, including thousands of dollars. Point number four, before any prescription would be taken, either Dr. Kiefer would be contacted by Dr. Porter himself or employees of EVMD would speak to her and get permission. That was the protocol. Point number five, the permissions would be given from Dr. Kiefer to the Porter or staff. Point number six, and let me just speak to you from a personal note. Before I represented Dr. Porter in this case, I was the United States attorney appointed by President Reagan. I've been involved in major investigations. I was the special prosecutor on the Lewis prison hostage situation. I was appointed by the legislature to head an impeachment investigation of a corporation commission. Many years earlier, I was involved in an investigation at the Arizona Boys Ranch. In each of those instances, I took for that experience agents of the FBI, DEA, IRS, and other federal agencies. In this particular case, when these accusations were leveled, I retained former FBI agent John Waugh, a 30-year veteran with the FBI. What we had done, and I will emphasize this, and I can't do it more strongly, in this investigation, the investigation by DPS, to put it mildly, was an F. We have interviewed current employees, former employees, and have provided affidavits to this board. The evidence that was given to the U.S. Attorney's Office did not include a single interview outside of statements made by Dr. Porter and Dr. Kiefer. In fact, when you look at the witnesses, there are six current and former employees that we've interviewed and provided affidavits confirming and supporting what Dr. Porter has indicated, that these, that they had permission and went expressly to Dr. Kiefer before calling those prescriptions in. Monica Langendorf, Misty Carroll, Tina Adee, Brittany Baker, Sean West, Riley Pico. Now, in our investigation, there were a number of people we could not contact. These were former employees, and some of those I just identified were former employees. Sydney Devine, Cheryl Raisles, Matthew Miller, Linda Pritchard. What we did is have the investigator go to the, through the EVND records, through the Arizona RX records, and confirm from prescriptions at pharmacies that these prescriptions have been determined. In other words, we have 10 witnesses who belie and contradict the unsubstantiated claims of Dr. Kiefer. And final, I will indicate that it has been my distinct honor to represent Dr. Porter. He is a good man. He's an outstanding naturopathic physician. I would urge this board to dismiss this allegation. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Board members?
Dr. Bruce, and I just noticed that. I'm taking it, sorry, I'm late.
Okay, let the minutes show 11:30, Dr. Spatt has joined us. Let me go through, if we could. I'll start with myself. If we go back basically to the foundation of the investigative report, we look at the real basics of this, and the basics are, if we go back to Dr. Porter, of the engagement with the pharmacy on writing the some of the medications, oxycodone, et cetera, that were out of scope. That's where we kind of need to look at as we work on this case. So if we go back to the root on this, that's probably where we need to dial in. With that being said, I don't want to call anybody, so let me go ahead and ask other board members if they have some feedback that they'd like to give too.
This is Dr. Popiel. I've got a couple questions that I'd like to ask. Dr. Porter and counsel, you guys have made it clear that your statement or your stance is that all these scripts were run through Dr. Kiefer prior to being sent into the pharmacy. Dr. Kiefer has provided a long list of prescriptions, and why she feels like the vast majority of these prescriptions could not and were not run by her. She's made numerous instances where either the prescription was called in on a weekend or she was not in the office on those dates that the prescription was sent in. How would you guys explain that? I would assume, you know, office staff is not reaching out to her on a Saturday to get approval for these scripts. So if she's not in the office based on all of these times that she's noting and or it's a weekend, how are you guys, how can we be sure that you guys are actually running these approvals by her?
I can answer that question. This is Dr. Porter. Chairman Popiel and other, and the rest of the board, I would, in regards to the Saturday prescription, in the beginning when this was exposed, I went through myself and looked at every prescription that my wife had been prescribed over the last 7-8 years. That prescription you're speaking of specifically that was written on Saturday was actually called in by myself, likely. I believe that was sent to me. Again, this is an example in which the PMP does not always report exactly accurate details. So no, it was one of the scripts that I'd already written that the board has already been reported to abound. And so that wasn't Dr. Kiefer. That was me calling in or sending in a script for my wife for Fentramine. As far as the other scripts, we have not provided We have provided in the initial findings, particularly the grouping associated with missing information and missing charts, evidence of just missing written notes for prescriptions of various natures by Dr. Kiefer for her patients. In regard to, we have not submitted to the board, but if my staff worked with and would be prescribing medications for patients through our office, and also patients who would call our offices on days in which Dr. Kiefer was not in the office. We were dealing with prescriptions on a daily basis, and so prescriptions were sent in from every office and called in from every location. Particularly when a doctor is not present, the staff has ways to communicate. They have text. We have text documents, and of course we have documents within the electronic health record itself. But medications were called in and utilized or called in on days regularly for all sorts of patients of Dr. Kiefer's. And again, we can provide evidence if that's the case, and we have pages of that.
Thank you for that. I've got a couple of questions in addition. Okay, go ahead. Okay. On one of these, it was a soma prescription, and this is a conversation you and Dr. Kiefer had that was documented in Practice Fusion, and I apologize, I'm looking for it. Essentially, it was called in. It came to Dr. Kiefer's attention that a prescription refill was needed. She reached out to you, asked you if that soma prescription was needed. You said no. It turns out that it looked like you had actually refilled that soma prescription under Dr. Kiefer's DEA, if in fact that's how it happened. I'm just giving you what I'm seeing here.
Yes.
It looks like you had that prescription had already been sent in a couple days earlier. So my question would be, is if Dr. Kiefer was aware of this prescription, why would she be asking you if it needed to be refilled? And put the different way, if in fact you were the one that prescribed it, under Dr. Kiefer's information, and she's coming to you asking if that needs to be prescribed, why you wouldn't have communicated with her, it was already prescribed. I don't know if you know the exact incident I'm trying to find. I think it was back in 2013 or 14, but it's evidence you submitted and Dr. Kiefer submitted.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with those messages. Again, it's hard to go back in 2013 and know exactly how the details happened. But let me say this, often, and we've given evidence of this, but often if something isn't charted or done, and when somebody's going to an office and they're here one day and not here the next day, I think it's very easy for people to forget what they did even a day ago or 2 days ago. Again, a prescription or somehow an authorization came through, somehow somebody called it in and authorized it, whether or not I authorized that or Dr. Kiefer did, at, you know, 2 days earlier or when that happened, I don't know. But we know from what my staff, both current and past staff, say that Dr. Kiefer required a lot of prodding, meaning because the records were often missing, that again, sometimes she doesn't remember or acknowledging or said that she took care of that, or she said, hey, yeah, go ahead and take care of that. The thing is, messages come from the office, you know, even on the same day or within the same hour, but if you don't check your electronic health record, you're not looking at a message till 2 days later. And so you're communicating about something that happened 2 days before. And again, that makes it look like there's some issue there. But the reality is, that's just communication when people aren't there every day and when you're not keeping track exactly of every detail. So, you know, that's just messy office of business when not everybody's there every day. So, all I can say is that we didn't.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, all I can say is that even we provided in our recent board submission numerous examples, I think close to 18, of charging by Dr. Kiefer, you know, showing that she is treating my wife. So the question is she treating my wife? Is she not treating my wife? She is or she isn't. You know, and if you're prescribing prescriptions, particularly controls and putting refills on that and authorizing refills, then when is it that you started prescribing medications for my wife and when did you stop? And there's no clear evidence of either of those, other than at some point it started and at some point it stopped, and we don't, you know, and there's evidence scattered in between, that that was going on.
Okay. And then on, apologize, I'm just looking for the start date. Starting on what looks to be 10/27 of 20, it was brought to our attention by Dr. Kiefer that either yourself or a Misty Carroll accessed your wife's chart, what looked, I think, was upwards of 500 times within a three-day period. So I'd like you to comment on what you were doing accessing her chart that many times, why you were accessing her chart that many times, and then also Dr. Kiefer provided chart notes that she has done and that in practice fusion she has signed off on. So obviously when you do the chart note, it's left open until you sign it. So it looks like, based on what I can tell, the vast majority of the chart notes, maybe if they're not up to speed, whatever. However, the vast majority of chart notes that Dr. Kiefer has done, she has signed off on. She comments on two or three chart notes that are clearly not signed off on that she is deeming fraudulent. And potentially, I guess the accusation is that you or Misty or whoever has inserted chart notes into your wife's chart to help support the claims of necessity with these prescriptions. So I guess, why were you guys accessing her chart that many times, and how are there chart notes that Dr. Kiefer deems forged showing up in the patient's chart, which clearly are not signed off on, which would then also give some validity to her claim? Sorry for the long-winded message or question.
There's two questions there, if I understand it correctly. I'm gonna answer the first one. The reason you find that evidence of having the chart being accessed that many times by or for my, or the chart for my wife being accessed that many times by our office manager is because they were looking through what they call the chart history. And so what Kiefer doesn't understand, and I'm hoping I've tried to make very clear through our presentations, is that when any action, minute I open a chart, or the minute I sign a chart, or the minute I even add a script to a chart, it doesn't matter what I do, if I press a key, there is actually a recorded history made in the chart for each patient. And so what we were doing is going through there to try to evaluate any evidence and find any evidence, did Dr. Kiefer access my wife's chart at all in regards to, hey, did she look at it? Did she look at her prescription history? I provided evidence that, in fact, he did do that, and that's how we found that information. We had to scroll through, obviously, 8 years of data, meaning 8,000, I don't know, quite a few pages of data to find and track every point in time in which a transaction happened. Now, I'll say this. And we invited the board and anybody who wants to come, we can put you on our computers. We can give you the logins. We'll sit there with you and you can go through and look at this yourself. But if there was any evidence of me making a chart or changing a chart or falsifying any chart in regards to my life, it would be present in that history. And so that moment is just us looking at my wife's history, determining what evidence could we find over time that, contrary to Kiefer, Dr. Kiefer's testimony, she did access and did know and did look at my wife's medication history. And that's what we were doing. And we did discover that to be the case. Okay, I hope that answers question number one.
Yes, that's fine.
Question number two, I think I need more clarification, meaning I understand that in the last meeting, Dr. Kiefer claimed that there was chart notes that we falsified or we did something with. Is that, you're referring to those chart notes or chart specifically?
Correct. Essentially, it's okay. A chart note under Dr. Kiefer's name, but is it's more so kind of, I think, her understanding that and her documentation that when she does a chart note, that she's signing off on it, and the fact that there are chart notes in your wife's chart that are not signed off on, that raises the question of the validity of that. Now, clearly somebody could forget to do their signature on it, but it's not necessarily suggesting, it's kind of suggesting that maybe in one of those instances you guys were accessing your wife's chart, this could have been a chart note that was made, because it doesn't tell you when this chart note was made, from what I can see.
Well, the system does, meaning, again, that same idea, when you look at the chart history, you can go through, and the minute a chart is made on a patient, when they schedule the first appointment, to the day they leave the office forever, you can look at every individual who accessed it, what they did, and so, again, that information is there, and there's no, and anything that is there that's because, and, well, let me say this. When we didn't realize early on after Dr. Kiefer had left our practice in July of 2020 that she had made these accusations against me. But once we discovered, and once Dr. Kiefer left and we began to take over patient care, we began to recognize many charts were incomplete. I instructed my whole office and my staff to give Dr. Kiefer time to complete those charts, not to delete or change any of her charts that her name on it. And those charts have names on them because they were opened as a result of a scheduled visit, meaning a patient showed up in the office, the system generates an automatic chart, her name is assigned as the doctor, and I asked all the doctors, do not touch anything that has Dr. Kiefer's name on it. You start fresh. You update the chart and you start from the get-go. Well, that's what they are, and again, anybody who wants to come to look at that data, and again, it's thousands of pages. I think we provided enough evidence to the board to read, I think, to do that, but we can do it if you like, but you can look at that and you can track every chart of every patient, and that's what we did. And that means for us, when we look at what we've claimed about patient charts, it's the absolute truth. It can't be falsified. It can't be manipulated. It is what it is. When we try to keep the records there, and we have not deleted anything.
Got it. Thank you for answering those questions. I appreciate it. That's the only questions I have for right now. Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cofield. Let me ask, Dr. Spad, are you ready or do you want me to move on to another board member?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, my apologies. This is Justin Larson with the Attorney General's office. I noticed that Dr. Spat joined or announced that he joined at about 11:30. And I would just ask, whether Dr. Spat, how much of the earlier presentation in this formal interview that Dr. Spat heard, and B, I would ask Mr. McDonald if he has any objection to Dr. Spat continuing to participate.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Now, Dr. Spat, would you want to let your turn on this go then?
Sorry that I'm late, but I was in 11:25, so I started hearing the conversation there. So let's go ahead and pass on to the next, whoever our next board member is. And I did read the case, and so, but at this point, I don't have any question at this point.
Okay.
Dr. Spat, I mean, sorry, go ahead, Mr. McDonald.
I was only going to suggest, for that portion that he read, the beauty of having a court reporter there is that I would like him to be involved and participate in what he didn't hear. I would have no objection after the hearing is concluded to have the court reporter confer with him, find out what was missed, and then read what was transcribed so that if he did miss some of the presentation, he could be caught up as every other board member.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin Larson again. I guess it's up to the board, but if Dr. Spat doesn't really feel the need to participate in the matter at this point, then I would suggest that he perhaps wait this one out and wait for the next matter.
Thank you. Dr. Campbell, can I move up to you reference this matter?
Yes, you can. I actually moved up in the questions that I had written down that were actually already covered. So just give me one quick second and I'll be right with you. Let me find the next question. Hold on.
This is Dr. Bopiel. Do we still have quorum without Dr. Spat voting today?
Yes, sir. We do.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Okay, I'm back. Thank you so much. Again, this is Clinton Campbell, Dr. Clinton Campbell talking. And Dr. Porter, can you hear me okay, sir?
I can. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for being with us today. I understand that there's a lot to this case, both directly related to your colleague's accusations and information that has arisen as a result of the board's investigation. And we also listened to Director Anthony's opening, during which time she described investigating various patient case files and learning information to suggest that overprescribing may have happened on a couple of different occasions, and that also there was some documentation wherein you may have admitted making entries in patient files after the fact. Can you address some of those issues that she stated?
Yeah, correct. I have responded historically in different submittals to the board on these different issues in regards to controlled prescriptions prescribed. As I had stated, this is certainly one specific area in which my attorney recommended because I recalled not doing that, but I submitted to a polygraph test. And in the polygraph test, found it that I did not knowingly prescribe controlled medication to those two patients. What we think happened, and Practice Fusion, which is my electronic health record system, historically had been involved in a lawsuit in which they were accused of promoting certain opiates or brands. I believe that when I typed in a medication that I'm able to prescribe, that it populated, instead of populating the one I typed in, it populated another. And so in that, I just carried through as the system does, and I ended up prescribing or printing that and not really looking at it. I have been, and it's been brought up, of course, that years ago I was brought before the board because I accidentally prescribed Adderall to a patient as a new physician. And of course, because of that, I have always been very vigilant or diligent in trying to make sure that I'm prescribing within my scope. So even when we discovered that, I was very shocked to see that. And of course, we discovered it and just tried to make sure that I don't know how it happened. And again, it wasn't intentional on my part to do that. I'm sorry. Could you remind me of, there was a few questions there. Could you remind me of the other question?
Absolutely, and thank you for your response. I'd like to now talk about some prescriptions that you had written. It was identified as 9-9 of 2019, 3-6 of 2020, in which you failed to adequately record the prescriptions within the patient's files. And can you go through some of those prescriptions and what was the justification in writing those?
Well, again, I think it, obviously I don't deny that. My wife, I think these prescriptions you're mentioning are specific for the patient, JT, in regards to, is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, and so I do not deny giving or writing those prescriptions for my wife. She had historical benefit with those, originally prescribed by Dr. Kiefer. And at the moment, my wife is in a desperate situation.
just feeling really, really low. And I found, because this had helped in the past, I decided to prescribe it for her. And so that was that. I think even though, again, I understand that this is not recommended or is against the board's recommendation for treating a family member in that regard. I understand that and accept any consequence for that. I think at the same time, it also provides proof and evidence. If I was on a regular basis using Dr. Kiefer's DEA license, as I've been accused of, why didn't I do it at this time also? Why would I break the pattern? The reason is because she wasn't available and my normal staff wasn't available. And so I took it upon myself to do what I could do on my own, you know, without having anybody else around to do that. And so that was on me and for the therapy that had worked for her in the past.
Okay. And whenever in the course of your duties as a physician, whenever you may have had a question with regard to whether or not a medication was in or out of scope, how did you navigate that process when there was something that was in front of you and maybe you didn't quite know whether or not it was in or out of scope? How would you address that?
Oh, I have a printout of the medications from the Arizona Pharmacy Board and the classes for naturalization. It sits on my desk or near my desk. And anytime I have a concern, I refer to it. I refer to it frequently, and if anybody in the office has a concern, they usually come to me and I check it, because like I say, I'm a little more hypervigilant about it. And again, I as odd as it sounds to me, it was just an out of the blue, weird thing that happens that I have no explanation for. There was no intent on my part to prescribe those medications for those that one or the two patients who received it. I really believe. And again, I'm sorry. Let me remind the board that we provided evidence from the practice fusion that even the prescription that I've written was no longer even evident within the practice fusion or electronic health record at all. So even though the pharmacy had a record of it within the practice fusion, there was no evidence, which is to suggest to me that there's something wrong with the way the records were being kept. And I feel like there's something within the programming, the cloud-based system that was actually created the problem. Because again, I know better not to do that. I prescribe a group of medications that are controlled. I know what they are and I don't step out of that bound generally. Now, I did prescribe ketamine, but unbeknownst to us, it came as a recommendation from a local compounding pharmacist. When I prescribed it to my wife, I had no idea it was a controlled prescription. And so that was on me. I should have checked or asked, but sometimes we get told things or we're sold things. And again, that was a new therapy. We were trying it on people. And again, we didn't know at the time that it was controlled. And so we had no way of evaluating that one in a correct way that we would normally evaluate it.
Okay. And with regard to the 8 different patients, whose initials that we heard by Director Anthony at the opening.
Yes.
We learned that of those 8 patients that failure to adequately and properly document visits and actions taken on behalf of those patients, with the exception of TW, whose vitals were documented on 2 specific dates. Can you address this finding?
Yes. Well, I readily admit that that is a failing on my part to adequately document physical exams and vitals for patients as they, are in my clinic. And so I've improved upon that greatly and more diligent and trying to be perfect at that in my charting and documentation in that regard. So I understand.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I believe that was all the questions that I had initially written here. If you'd like to move on for now.
I'm sorry,
Thanks,
if you'd
Campbell.
Like to move.
anything to add?
Nothing at this time.
Okay. Ms. Tippett?
I don't have any questions, but I was wondering if it would be possible to go to executive session. I have some questions for legal advice for Mr. Larson.
Yes, I'll second your motion. It is 11:59, and Gail, can you give a quick roll call for us to go into executive?
Yes, executive session for legal advice. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popeo?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. We'll see each other in executive session. And everyone has that contact.